NPR and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Sustainable Living Program. Tanya Vidovic is here and John is away. Hey, Tanya, how are you?
Hey, good morning. Doing great over here. Yeah, John, I guess, had some problems with the water buffalo this morning, so he couldn't quite make it in. So we miss you, John.
All right. Well, you've got a good show lined up and you've got two special guests.
We do. On today's show, we're going to be talking about what efforts our federal and local governments are doing to drastically reduce greenhouse gases. We're going to be talking about climate change, the New Green Deal, and then the important questions, I guess, facing humanity, which is climate change. We have two guests that we are really honored to have in the studio today. We have U.S. Representative Kathy Castor and Ready for 100 Brian Beckman in the studio. So thank you guys so much for coming in.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And then Kathy Castor, I'm sure everybody knows, is Tampa Bay's representative as the nationwide environmental champion voice in the U.S. Congress. This is her seventh term representing the Tampa Bay area and serves on the Energy and Commerce Committee, appointed to lead a special committee on climate change. Castor represents Florida's 14th congressional district, which includes Tampa, parts of Hillsborough County. She was originally elected in 2006 as the first woman to represent Hillsborough and Pinellas County in U.S. Congress. And Brian Beckman, who's been working nonstop all over Tampa Bay, meeting with community leaders and local governments, he's doing presentations explaining renewable energy to city commissions and councils in a push for renewable energy, which is called the Ready for 100. Brian is currently volunteer with the Suncoast Sierra Club, leading the Pinellas area. So welcome, guys. So, again, we're talking about climate change. So, Kathy, what do you think about the New Green Deal and what happened with it?
Well, it's a call to action and was rolled out, turned into a resolution at the congressional level. But it's very general. So now my charge, leading the new House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis, which was instituted by the Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic Caucus when the Democrats took the House majority in the start of the year. The charge is now to hammer out very bold and creative policies to tackle the climate crisis across all segments of public policy, from the national defense, the armed services, to the energy sector, to the transportation sector, to agriculture. So it's quite a charge. And I have to say I'm grateful to folks like Brian who've been working at the local level, because it's been our cities, universities, some businesses, a lot of states that have carried the water on reducing carbon pollution at a time when the federal government has not been taking the bold type of action that's needed.
So I know that you and I guess AOC kind of had some differing ideas about the Green Deal, the New Green Deal. What were the main kind of controversies between that?
Well, in fact, the Democrats are united in climate action now. Just a little over a month ago, the House of Representatives passed the first climate legislation in a decade, and that unified every Democrat in the House caucus, including my good friend, Representative Ocasio-Cortez, and folks that use the moniker Blue Dogs or New Dems. But that bill, which I authored, was H.R. 9, the Climate Action Now Act, that said we are not going to allow President Trump to take us out of the Paris Climate Accord. That would be a disaster. Instead, if he's not going to follow President Obama's rules under the Clean Power Plan and the Paris Climate Agreement, what is their plan to do that? We're going to follow that up in legislation through the appropriations bills that are moving through the House right now, again, to cut off all money to allow him to take us out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
And that made it through the House. Is there, how does the Senate look? Do you think we're going to get support?
Senator Gene Shaheen from New Hampshire has introduced the Senate companion. All Democrats have signed on except for Joe Manchin from West Virginia. We have to pressure Mitch McConnell to act. Unfortunately, you know what he's calling himself? lately is the Grim Reaper, because legislation goes to the Senate to die, and that includes background checks, that includes some of the things we're working on to lower the cost of prescription drugs and lower health care costs, to raise wages, and unfortunately it includes climate action now. But I think public opinion is on our side, the science is on our side. It's just a matter of time, I believe, until the federal government enacts very bold, far-reaching policies.
I've noticed that just like following online on the, when you follow the bills, next to every bill it says died, died, died. So it seems like that's an appropriate name for him.
Congressman, can I ask you though, the pushback from Republicans and others, they say it's too expensive. The Green New Deal overall is too expensive. And even though you've only passed a resolution, they say if we go in that direction, the country can't afford it. What do you say?
I'd say folks right here in the state of Florida understand that they're facing significant rising costs, whether it's their property insurance, their property taxes that now go to fix water, wastewater systems, your flood insurance. People are getting those bills in the mail. You better have flood insurance because we're going to have more extreme weather events and rain events. There is a cost to higher air conditioning bills and health costs. As the days are hotter, the summers are longer, folks are going to struggle if they have asthma. That's going to be more difficult to work outside. So really, the cost of inaction is much higher than what we can do in transforming the electricity sector to go solar or the transportation sector to go electric vehicles.
And there are new jobs in that, right? If we do put all this money to renewables and to green infrastructure, I mean, that's going to create, I mean, do you know how many jobs that would create?
You know, the jobs in the solar and wind energy sectors right now far outpace anything being provided in the fossil fuel sectors. As the coal plants go offline, those workers and communities need new family-sustaining jobs. So we've got to plan out a just transition so that the jobs are in place, not just a few training programs here and there, but family sustaining jobs in industries, clean industries, maybe building the electric buses of the future, building the electric vehicles of the future, transitioning our electric grid so that more renewables can serve the grid. We've got to rebuild the entire grid across this country to make it more resilient as well.
That brings up a good point, because Florida is just one of 13 states that has not yet set a goal for renewable power generation. How do we go about changing that? In legislation, but then also as a community, like what can we do?
Yeah, Florida is so far behind. We do not have a renewable energy goal. Most states do. In fact, the electric utilities a few years ago even rolled back our conservation goals. So there, no one is incentivized to conserve energy and lower bills. The business model for electric utilities in the state of Florida is entirely backward, because it's based upon selling as much energy as you possibly can, building expensive plants, rather than conservation, energy efficiency, and bringing clean, renewable energy onto the grid. They've got to be pushed. Governor DeSantis has a big role. The legislature has a big role. But I hope citizens are going to hold their elected officials accountable on this.
And then again, you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show, WMNF Tampa. And today we're talking about the new Green Deal and climate change with U.S. Representative Kathy Castor and Brian Beckman. So thanks for listening to the show. So, and Kathy, there's other things that are going on in the environment that obviously we need to address. It's not just renewable jobs. What do you feel about, you know, the algae and the and the red tide?
Well, that's another significant cost, as Rob asked, what higher costs are we facing? One of the costs of inaction will be higher Gulf temperatures will lead to more intense hurricanes, but also the scientists think they play a role in the toxic green algae being so ubiquitous and much more difficult to address, especially if it's West Coast, East Coast, with nutrient runoff when you have larger rain events. We're going to struggle with that unless we can turn the tide.
Is there legislation being talked about as far as stopping people from and large corporations from dumping and having this large amount of nutrients being put into our waterways.
Unfortunately, the GOP Florida legislature has gone backwards, but everyone's has some hope because Governor DeSantis has appointed a science officer and a resiliency officer. We're pressing him now to start the transition in Florida to clean energy. That would have the greatest impact in the ability to lower our greenhouse gas emissions, take some of the ocean acidification, lower the nutrient load going into the Gulf waters and the Atlantic and all of our water bodies.
So, do you think that climate change is going to be on the front of the discussion in the upcoming elections?
I know it is. You've already seen a significant shift to this discussion between the candidates. Boy, hats off to Governor Jay Inslee, who's put together a most detailed climate plan. The other candidates have done that as well. And I know folks were upset that the Democratic Party said, well, we're not going to have a debate focused solely on climate. Every debate they have should focus in some way on solutions to the climate crisis.
And is that something you're working on in your committee?
You bet we are.
That was a lot of enthusiasm.
The first hearing we held, we had young people from across the country come in and serve as witnesses, which is a little bit different from your typical congressional hearing. And young people today, they know what the stakes are. That's why you're seeing the youth climate strikes every Friday, while you're seeing a climate movement. And they are engaged. They're ready to tackle the climate crisis. They are rising to the occasion, and we need to rise with them.
Yeah, the Fridays for Future, right? I know the Sarasota students, that chapter is still protesting, even through the summer that they're not even in school. They're still protesting through the summer. So obviously, these young people are being, you know, that they're woke to it. They're woke to these issues more than it seems like a lot of the adults are.
I agree. And we've got to meet the challenge now. Unfortunately, we have the solutions. We have the technology at our fingertips. There's no reason in the world that the Sunshine State should take a back seat to Georgia, North Carolina, New Jersey on the amount of solar energy we produce. That doesn't make sense for the challenges we face today.
Are you finding constituents who are surprised that they're now included in flood zone maps, whereas a few years ago they weren't? I mean, given that the seas are expected to rise a certain number of feet over the next 30 years and 80 years, are constituents being caught off guard?
I don't think they're caught off guard, but these are some of the modern answers that we have. We now have the technology to do accurate mapping of flood zones. And I think anyone who watched the last hurricane season and saw Houston, Texas, inundated by an extreme rain event, saw that they allowed people to build in the flood zone in certain watershed areas. And really, if we're going to address a more resilient United States of America, we've got to ensure that people are not allowed to build in those areas. They need every opportunity to mitigate. Sometimes that's the answer, to raise the elevation or to build some other kind of resiliency into your business. But we have to have as many people in that are in flood zones to be paying their flood insurance so that that insurance pool is healthy.
Are some of the insurance rates too low for people that live in flood zones?
Well, they need to be actuarially sound. That's why accurate mapping is so important.
Congresswoman Kathy Castor is our guest, and you're listening to the Sustainable Living Program on WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Tanya Vidovic is here. So, Congresswoman, you talked about Senator Manchin from West Virginia being the only Democrat not on board with this resolution supporting a Green New Deal. What is the pushback? Who are the big lobbyists there in Washington, D.C., where you work, that are pushing back against things like the Green New Deal?
Well, it's primarily the fossil fuel companies. They have, for decades, spread false information, gotten scientists whose specialty is not climate to speak out in opposition to reducing carbon pollution. But now it's very clear to everyone. I've noticed a change in the rhetoric from my Republican colleagues in Washington, where they now say, okay, climate change is happening. Humans are causing it for the most part. But then they kind of throw up their hands and they say, but
And they just say move. You know, like, we'll just move somewhere else. Well, you can't just pick up an entire community and move it to another location without, I mean, even that's hard. But then, I mean, there's a lot of environmental impacts with that too, right?
You bet. And there are ways to make this create jobs, lower your electric bills, make your vehicles more fuel efficient. And that's where we run into a policy roadblock from the GOP, especially out of the Trump administration, where the president now has installed a coal lobbyist at EPA and a gas lobbyist in charge of the Interior Department.
So that seems like corruption to me in the EPA. So what are your thoughts about that?
It is. In fact, we had a hearing last week with four former EPA administrators. Three were Republican, and they said this is the worst they've ever seen our Environmental Protection Agency. They refuse to enforce the law. They're at a low ebb of enforcement actions in the history of the Environmental Protection Commission.
Ever.
You have scientists resigning. You have scientific panels. Now they're kind of laying them off and not listening. And what's unfortunate is they're trying to roll back a whole host of environmental protection rules on clean water and clean air. And fortunately, there are some environmental organizations that have stepped up to challenge it. But some of the worst things they're doing are in the area of climate change and denial.
What is happening with oil drilling near Florida's coast with the new head of the Interior Department in the Trump administration? Is there more likelihood that we will see oil drilling closer to Florida coast?
They have been moving ahead, Rob, on allowing those offshore areas, including offshore Florida, to go out for bid. Here's some good news, though. My Republican colleague Francis Rooney from Fort Myers area and I have a bill to extend the moratorium of drilling off of the coast of Florida, which expires in 2022. Our bill says, no, we're going to have a permanent protection. That bill will be marked up this week in the Natural Resources Committee in the House, and hopefully we can bring it to the floor, and then folks will, the Florida delegation needs to be united in supporting that.
Yeah, so then, I mean, we're talking about, you know, all these appointees from Trump and what they're doing. Is impeachment on the table now?
It, in essence, it is. When you see the, you know, you can call it impeachment or not, but we take our oversight responsibility very seriously. Just last week, took a very strong measure to enforce the subpoenas against Bill Barr and McGahn to make sure that they do come before the Congress to testify. It's important to get Robert Mueller to testify in public. He's resisted that. I've been disappointed in the way that Robert Mueller has rolled out his very extensive, in-depth report where he does lay out significant situations of obstruction of justice, and now we're trying to establish those facts in committee. And we will go wherever the facts lead.
Two counties in Florida were allegedly hacked by the Russians, according to the Mueller report. Do you know which two counties were hacked?
I do. We had a classified briefing from the FBI.
Why is the FBI so silent? Why does the public not know which these counties were? And what is the FBI and what is the Trump administration doing to protect us against future Russian hacking?
The rationale that the FBI gave us is that if they were to explain which two counties were actually had some intrusion problems, then that would give away the way they surveil that happening. So that was the rationale they gave us. I think I'm not completely satisfied that they shouldn't be sharing that information.
Are you confident that going into the 2020 election that we're protected, that the state of Florida is protected against something like that happening again?
I'm not 100% satisfied with that. Craig Latimer, our local supervisor of elections here in Hillsborough County, he has briefed me time and time again, and he assures me that he feels that the voting systems are secure. But everyone's going to have to be vigilant. No, I am not. And let's face it, the Russians continue to play in elections all across the world. We can anticipate that they will do it here. And how outrageous it was for President Trump to state last week in his interview with George Stephanopoulos that if materials were provided to him from a hostile foreign power, that sure, he'd take a look. No, you don't have to report it to the FBI. That's outrageous. And people should understand what's going on.
Congresswoman Kathy Castor is our guest, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa.
So when we're talking about climate change and the new Green Deal not passing, do you think it's up to local governments to regulate and kind of take the lead as far as like getting the local governments being the leaders as far as making resolutions to become more sustainable?
Everyone needs to act. And what's been so heartening, even during a time of obstruction by the Trump administration and inaction by the federal government, you have local communities that have been in the lead. And some corporations, a lot of states, look at California, they have a plan to go 100% clean energy. The new governor of New Mexico, Michelle Lujan Grisham, also is charting that course. The new governor in Colorado. Florida's behind. We don't even have a goal of trying to do 10% renewable over the next decade. So this is this is what our state, we should be in the lead.
And now you've urged Governor DeSantis, right, in order to make some address these sort of energy goals. What have you guys had conversations with him?
Yes. As soon as he was sworn in, we sent him correspondence from all the Democrats in the congressional delegation saying now is the time to lead on solar energy here in the Sunshine State and begin the transition to clean electric vehicles as well. And then I met with him in Tallahassee in his office in March at the beginning of the legislative session and encouraged him to be a leader. Here's a place where he really could make such a difference for our state, a state that's so vulnerable to the cost and impacts of the changing climate. He could be the clean energy governor and chart a course that everyone would rally behind.
Yeah, there's an opportunity, especially being in the Sunshine State. There's an opportunity for us to really, you're right, to lead. So you're listening to WMNF Tampa and the Sustainable Living Show. Today we're talking with U.S. Representative Kathy Castor and Brian Beckman with their Ready for 100 Change. For when we're talking climate change. And we actually have a question. I don't know if you want to answer questions via email. So Kevin asks, the new Green Deal calls for addressing the issues of poverty, income inequality, and racial discrimination. Could you provide your plan on these issues or our... the sentence doesn't make sense. Hold on a second. Your aspirations as you called the new Green Deal?
Well, let's just say that when we develop our broad set of policy proposals due next year, we have to be mindful of the fact that the folks who are often injured by climate change are often those on the margins and that live already. We have significant environmental justice issues with people of color living near fossil fuel plants or other industrial uses. So what we've got to do is make sure that those families have a pathway to a sustainable future. And that's going to be, you're going to see it in the ag sector. You're going to see it in their electric bills, opportunities for jobs in the clean energy sector. Make sure that they can afford these great new clean electric vehicles. We need to transition the bus fleet across the country, including school buses, to electric vehicles as we move to a 100% clean energy future.
So you had said in a statement that we need to act with urgency to reduce carbon pollution. How much time do you think we have in order before it actually really becomes, I mean, it already is an issue, but how much time do you think we have?
We don't have a lot of time, maybe a decade, but the sooner we act with urgency and in a bold manner, the less expensive it's going to be. In fact, I would say we have an opportunity now to save money on electric bills, save on the vehicles you drive, build more resilient communities that can be provide those family-sustaining jobs for folks who need it. But we better get to work soon.
No, definitely. Thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. You're so knowledgeable, and you're definitely an advocate for the environmental, or all the environmental issues in Florida and nationwide. So thank you for being a representative.
Great. And follow our new Select Committee on the Climate Crisis on Twitter at Climate Crisis, and we're also on the web.
Congresswoman Kathy Castor, thank you for spending all this time with us.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Tanya.
You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa.
Welcome to the Sustainable Living Show, WMNF Tampa. Today we're talking about climate change, and we have Kathy Castor just left. She was here for the last half an hour. But we also have Brian Beckman, who's ready for 100,
yay!
Right? Yay, welcome. So you've been working really hard all around Tampa Bay trying to convince local governments of the ready for 100.
Can you explain? let me clarify. So it's over in Pinellas. So when you say Tampa Bay, for me, it's concentrating on the county of Pinellas and the cities within Pinellas. And so, yeah, I've been involved here for, it's almost 2 years, starting my involvement with Sierra, with the city of Largo in particular, and working with them to set goals. So we were saying here off air, music to my ears, hearing Representative Castor talk about a number of great things that I can tell that she is very passionate about. And these are the kind of things that we go and talk to local officials and try to make sure, one, that they're aware, because many times you find out that they are not aware, and also talk to them about real solutions on how they can achieve those goals. So I think that's a lot about what they want to hear.
So, and I was there for two of your presentations. I mean, you come with you have about a 20-minute presentation on climate change, and then also you come with solutions on what these local governments can do. And then you work with them. How do you go about working with these, with the government entities on what they can do to change?
Well, some of it is that we have really smart people there in the Sunco Sierra Club in particular, where I volunteer, that bring a lot of knowledge that can be shared. But also there's a lot of great knowledge across the county. There are great sustainability coordinators that exist in the cities that I'm familiar with. So I work very closely with Laura Thomas, a sustainability coordinator in Largo, for instance. There's a sustainability director in St. Pete, a coordinator in Dunedin. They share a lot of information, but yet things are happening so rapidly right now with new solutions and what other cities are doing, that helping to facilitate that knowledge transfer, I see that it's valuable to them when we do that.
So, and then this, but the Ready for 100, even though you're working primarily in Pinellas, this is bigger than just Pinellas, right?
For sure, yeah. So it is a national campaign. As evidence now, there's, I think it's 126 cities that
That's
have
what
adopted.
I read, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And can you explain exactly what it is? Because I don't think we went over it. What is the Ready for 100? What are the cities, like, committing to?
Yeah, so the real basics of it are setting 100% renewable energy goals, no later than 2050 for the entire city.
But it can be sooner than that.
It can be sooner, and usually is, and usually what you see is that a city breaks it up into two pieces. They target city operations, which they have direct control over, and then the larger community. And the city operations target is usually much sooner.
Perfect. And I just want to mention again, you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show. I'm here with Rob Lori, Tanya Vidovic, and our awesome guest is Brian Beckman. He's with the Ready for 100 campaign. If you have any questions for him, please give us a call at 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org.
And Brian, which cities in Pinellas have signed up for this?
Yeah, so there's three. Started with St. Petersburg. I think it's almost 3 years ago now, and they were the first city in Florida. Last year, boy, I'm losing track of time here already, but last year it was Largo and then Dunedin. So those are the three. And I need to put in a plug here. So Tanya was here. It's so great having people like her that speak up in the community and make sure that community leaders know that they have people that want them to set these kinds of goals. So Safety Harbor, we have at their commission meeting tonight, which is 7 p.m. at their city hall. On Main Street there, they'll be voting on a resolution for Ready for 100.
And what's the shortest way? What's the quickest way to save energy for a municipality or a county? What do you think the biggest energy waster is in terms of county government or city government?
Well, I'll go through a couple of examples. Simple as it might seem, light bulbs are an opportunity. I have not actually paid attention to your light bulbs here. Out in the parking lot, I did see you change out your light bulbs to LED out there.
Yeah, these are compact fluorescents, but these are not LEDs yet.
Yeah, so yeah. You can save half electricity savings here on that. So that's so simple, and if you take an approach of just changing out the light bulbs from fluorescent to LED, you save at least 50%. Right there in your lighting. But there's a number of other alternatives. I'll give you another example. In the county, so the county school district of Pinellas, they employed a third-party consultant company. They helped them reduce their energy bills. I saw about 26% through no capital improvements. It's basically through changing behaviors and setting up monitoring, aggressive monitoring. And so it can be done a myriad of ways. And I think cities are looking into that consultant example to help them develop best practices.
So making sure the rooms are not air conditioned to 78 degrees overnight, that you might raise the temperature to 85 or something like
that's
that?
That's one example. That when I talked to the assistant superintendent of the county school district there, he gave an example of zoning the buildings, for instance, so that for evening activities, you don't have them dispersed throughout the building. You're concentrated on a certain part, and therefore you can reduce your energy consumption.
Hey, Rob, it looks like we have a couple of people on the line. Do we want to take a phone call?
Yeah, we've got Pat Kemp in Tampa and Amy in St. Petersburg. We'll go to Pat Kemp first, who wants to talk about Hillsborough County. Commissioner Pat Kemp. Hi, Pat. You're on MNF.
Hi, thank you. I've kind of lost my voice a little, but I just wanted to say, for those who don't know, I am vice chair of the Hillsborough County Commission. And for 2 years going past, I didn't quite have the support, and we have more support for this going into the future now. But I've been working quite hard on trying to bring sustainable practices, resilience to Hillsborough County. I just wanted to outline a few of those things. I have a lot of curiosity and a lot of questions about this, and I like to let people know that 2 years ago, we hired our first sustainability director. I was after the county to do this, and we did name a sustainability director who's been working on things since then. Last year, we did the county $4 million in solar panels for county buildings, and in one case, a Boys and Girls Club. And we're starting to do that to make sure that we have that at all of our libraries and all of our public buildings. I've been very aggressive about pushing that. This year, we're doing $5 million in solar panels. We've also, before I became a commissioner, set up a chiller system for pre-chilling water for several of the large buildings downtown, including the courthouse and county center. And it creates great energy efficiencies. It was supposed to be very innovative what we did, and it was then taken and modeled with Encore, the big Tampa Housing Authority projects, buildings downtown that have been done. And then that, again, was modeled then by Vinnick at Water Street. And what they're doing, Jeff Vinnick at Water Street, the development that they're doing there, they use that chiller system. We also made a policy. We've converted all of our parks have a five-year conversion to LED lighting, and we've been funding and changing all of our parks and our buildings. But our parks are been a huge focus. They use a lot of energy, the lights at our parks. And TECO, within the county footprint, is doing also a five-year program to convert the street lighting to LED.
It sounds like you guys are working really hard to do the right thing, to kind of be leaders in changing.
Well, yeah, we have, and we've also funded two programs for Hillsborough County residents, which I'd like people to know about, which are Florida Sun, which is a community solar co-op, and they're operating right now, and they're having meetings in Hillsborough County. I think they also work in the city of St. Petersburg, I'm not sure. But the SELF program is kicking off community solar co-op so that people can get help if they decide to put their own power system on their roof. It's really a effective and a great thing to bring distributed solar around and have vetted contractors and a community contract, which presumably we hope can cost less than if they just purchased it themselves.
And Commissioner Kemp, have you met with the Sierra Club at all about maybe moving the Hillsborough County over to solar by joining the Ready for 100 campaign and changing over?
I was conservation chair at Sierra Club. I've been a huge Sierra Club activist, along with Commissioner Smith on the commission now. So that wasn't at all possible in the past, before November. But so what I did was take the tactics to start doing everything that we could. I was at the rally on Saturday night against TECO buying a gas plant or starting to build a gas plant. I've been doing everything to move the agenda that way that's in my power, without making an official declaration. So I think that's definitely possible in the future. Also, I just would like listeners to know this. There is, as I said, Solar United Neighbors. That's the community co-op. But we also have a program called SELF, the Solar Energy Loan Fund. And that's directed to all kinds of energy efficiencies, not just solar panels, for middle and low-income people that own their own property that can do, they can work with them to get under the cost of their electric bill. For all kinds of things, insulation, new roof, solar panels, if so, SEER appliances, HVAC.
That sounds like
And it's a loan program, too. So they make the loan actually themselves, and they've had a 99% payback. This is like a micro lending program, but it's big. They've got $7 million for serving hundreds of people. We brought them into Hillsborough County to start working, and I'm very, very proud of them.
No, that sounds like a great great program that they're running. Again, you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show with WMNF. We have Commissioner Pat Kemp on the phone. We have Brian Beckman from Ready for 100, the Ready for 100 campaign, in the studio. If anybody has any questions, give us a call, 813-239-9663. So is there a way for somebody for our listeners to get in touch with you, Commissioner Kemp, if they have more questions about this?
They can call my office at any time, 272-5730, and contact my office. It's online to get more information about any of these programs. And they can go online to look at any of these programs. But to get specific information, I'm trying to get the county to put up a page specifically for these kinds of services we offer, because I think they're going to balloon out now that we've brought them in. By the way, the first kickoff for community solar by Solar United Neighbors, they operate in about 9 states, and they operate several programs throughout Florida. And their kickoff here in Hillsborough County was the largest kickoff that they had ever had in the nation. And I think that that was a lot of pent-up demand.
No, definitely. That is there. It seems like the community is really supporting moving to a more, you know, sustainable future. If you want to send me some of that information, I'd be happy to share it on the website. And thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it.
Okay. I just too would like to just say we're doing a lot in Fleet. The sheriff is planning to look at doing hybrid vehicles.
Pat, we've got every line lit, and
next year 8 electric buses. But I just wanted people to understand that there's a lot moving ahead in Hillsborough County. So
all right,
I'll let you go. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks for calling.
Great to hear from you. We're talking with Brian Beckman, volunteer with the Sierra Club. He's with the Ready for 100 campaign. John in Port Richey writes this, Brian. He says, I thought Congresswoman Castor stated that more jobs are being created in the green energy sector than in the fossil fuel sector. Congresswoman Castor mentioned this in regards to coal plants. I've heard on conservative radio that oil drilling has created a lot of jobs. How do the jobs created in the green energy sector compare to the jobs created in the oil drilling sector?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with actual numbers, but certainly from a natural gas and oil perspective, when you think about in the Permian Basin, for instance, there's a lot of drilling going on there. To my knowledge, though, the solar jobs and the wind jobs are in the hundreds of thousands of new job area. So it is still, to my understanding, the number one growth in jobs in that sector.
Now, Bill in St. Pete writes this, all this talk about clean energy is deceiving when that electric bus plugs in at Big Bend. Big Bend burns coal. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not happening, writes Bill in St. Pete. All right, so are we doing damage by going to electric cars or electric buses?
No, I'll give you a couple reasons why. One, when it comes to smog, okay, so when you're burning fuel right there at the source with your bus and you're using an electric vehicle, you're reducing that smog. But take so in my home, for instance, I have solar. So I am a net zero home that includes my vehicle. So that covers the fuel, i.e. the electricity that goes into my vehicle. And so I am lowering emissions all around. When you look at our portfolio of our generation mix across the state, it is still better to get that fuel from our electric grid to fuel a vehicle than to use gasoline when you look at the net emissions.
So if the local governments and the local energy companies, if TECO in Duke have more solar farms, then when we do plug into our outlets, it will be coming from solar. It doesn't have to be coming from these, from coal or fracking?
That's correct. Well, and if you, I looked at Duke's portfolio mix and their plan for all their different sites. They are reducing their coal, and so that in large part means they're increasing natural gas. Natural gas generation is less emission intensive than gasoline. So that mix is still better. And if I could just mention one thing back to when the commissioner was on, those were all fantastic things that I heard there. The thing I did not hear was setting goals for the county. And that to me is a key missing ingredient, is setting forth goals that you're constantly monitoring against. And when you're doing all those great things, you're showing progress against those goals.
So you're in Pinellas. Is there a Tampa representative that can possibly contact Ms. Commissioner Kemp and get that on the table to get them to move to solar?
Yeah, so we have Sierra volunteers, if that's what you're asking. Yeah, so I don't know those people's names off the top of my head, although I did just see them on Saturday, so I'm sorry about that. But yeah, I can share that information.
And you're listening to the WMNF Tampa, the Sustainable Living Show. We are here today with Brian Beckman, and we're talking about the Ready for 100 campaign from the Sierra Club, where the Sierra Club is encouraging local governments to go to 100% renewable energy by 2050.
And if Tanya,
yes,
we have a ton of phone calls. And let's go to Amy, rather, in St. Petersburg. Amy, you're on, and we're talking about setting goals for renewable energy.
Yeah, thank you all. Thank you for expressing your efforts towards sustainability. I feel the need to identify that the urgency to stop polluting the groundwater and the waterways, the earth, in general through pollution is not necessarily being addressed in the same parallel urgency that needs to be done with CO2 in the atmosphere. We talk about, you know, changing to your guess. I believe the Sierra Club is really not for switching straight to natural gas as a method of reducing CO2s, because it's going to pollute the groundwater immensely. Groundwater pollution from stormwater runoff, filled herbicides, fertilizers, gas, and oil on the roads, and from boats at the mouth of the estuary is a parallel problem to CO2 in the atmosphere. Encompassed in a conversation specifically, not mashed in with CO2 in the air. It needs to be addressed immediately, urgently, and it's the same parallel issue. You know,
you're starting to break up, but I think we got the gist of the question.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. The algae blooms are very imminent at our feet.
Thank you so much for your call. I think you're breaking up, Brian. Do you want to?
Yeah. So certainly, Sierra's Ready for 100 movement does not advocate for natural gas. That is, it's for 100% renewable energy. So that's the simplest way for us to think about that. Again, is nationally wind, solar, and hydro. And so from a Sunshine State perspective, that's mainly solar. Wind is not the technology that's economically feasible here in the state of Florida. It may be at some point, but it's really solar is the big alternative there. And certainly the impact to our groundwater from fracking of natural gas is a big deal, and that's why we do not advocate for natural gas.
So the next question comes from Phil Compton from the Sierra Club. He says, how much money will the Jim and Heather Gills YMCA in St. Petersburg save on their power bill with LEDs that you and the Suncoast Sierra Club helped them install?
Okay, so Phil's a friend of mine, so he lobbed me that question here. So, but it is a great example. They're going to save over $10,000 a year in their electricity bill. Private donors in the Suncoast chapter donated about $3,700 worth of light bulbs to save them over $10,000 a year.
And that $10,000, that's one building that they are saving $10,000 a year.
That's right.
That's amazing.
That's
so
right.
This is for a $3,800 investment, they make that up times three in one
basically
year.
Basically, in 4 months, they get that money back. And it's a donation up front, so they don't have to pay anything. And when you look at over the projected life of the bulbs as they're rated, it's over $100,000 in savings.
Wow.
So, terrific. Let's go to Laura, who's in Safety Harbor, where that hearing will be tonight. Laura, thanks for coming on WMNF. Hi, Laura. Laura, did we lose you? Okay. Laura, we'll put you on hold and we'll come back. Let's go to David in Pasco County. David, what's your question for Brian Beckman?
Brian, any news about the Ridge Road extension in Pasco? Has that been defeated, or is the Sierra Club in Pasco still fighting that?
I think it's still a fight that's still going on. I'm not directly involved in that, so I get some updates from time to time. To my knowledge, it is still an issue and still being fought.
All right.
Do you want to check back and see if Laura made it?
Yeah. David, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question. And we've done Ridge Road programs about it in the past. We'll try to do some in the future. Let's go to Laura in Safety Harbor. Laura, are you there? Okay, she is not there. Next question comes from Anonymous, and Brian, you'll like this question. Anonymous says, Tampa has put a street light on my block about a mile inside Tampa city limits. They replaced it within the last couple of weeks with an LED bulb, which I appreciate. However, it is obnoxiously bright, literally like a spotlight shining into every one of my windows facing the street. It's awful, writes Anonymous. And this person goes on to say, I'm going to have to continue to talk myself out of shooting it or hitting it with yellow paintball guns. This is why so many people think they hate liberals, writes this anonymous person.
Yeah, so that's not the first time that I've heard people complain. If it's near them, I'm surprised that complaint, if it's so far away from them. But there are alternatives. So the alternative is you don't have to put in as bright of a bulb as what the energy company might do. And this is something that I've seen that...
There's different wattages, right? Like
Sure. So there's these equivalent ratings of, if you had a 200-watt bulb, that might have been a halogen, that you have a 100 watt equivalent LED. You don't have to put in something that's so powerful. And I think that's an example that I heard there in St. Pete, that when they negotiated the change out of their street lights, that they didn't go for a higher wattage. So that's one option. The other option is that you can put refractors there on the side so that it doesn't project the light out to the sides as much.
And you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show on WMNF Tampa. We are talking with Brian Beckman from the Ready for 100 campaign on moving local governments over to renewable energy. So what comes up a lot in conversation is energy storage if you move to 100% solar. Is there new technology available? Like, how is that going to work?
Yeah, so it is definitely a hot area of research, as well as costs continue to reduce from a battery perspective. So battery is probably still the number one area. But if you went out there and Googled up energy storage, you would see a myriad of different alternatives. I think I saw Duke Energy up in the Carolinas where they're pumping water up a mountain into a reservoir that holds the water, and then as they need the energy, they have it go through turbines and it generates electricity, and they can just repeat that over and over again. So you can use that energy at the time that you need it. Now, we obviously don't have that as a solution here because of our elevation situation, but those examples are going to be I think pursued more and more just beyond batteries, although batteries are still going to be, I think, the predominant area here in the next 10 years or so.
For storage?
Yes.
And so if a local government is interested in doing this, so can you explain kind of the steps? We talked about moving to LEDs and reducing consumption, but what are the next steps for a local government if they're interested in making their dependence on energy to more renewables?
Yeah, so really there's three pathways to get to 100% renewables. The first one is through energy efficiencies. Usually that's something around 25% or so of reduction. Second is installing your own renewables. And then third is purchasing renewables. It's the purchasing part, which is the tougher part in the state of Florida to do that on a city by city basis. But those are the pathways to get there. But once a city sets a goal and passes a resolution, it's building a plan to achieve those goals and having different markers, maybe 5 years out. So I'll use the city of Largo, for instance. They had targets for 5% per year energy reduction through energy efficiencies. And then by 2030, they have to reach their city operations goal to be 50% renewables.
And why is it harder in Florida? You said that it was harder in Florida for governments to buy energy. Why is that?
Well, because our laws restrict that. So I moved here from Illinois a few years ago. Me as a consumer, I could buy my energy from virtually anybody. Texas is another example. It's deregulated, so you can buy your energy from anybody. That means you can buy it from a company that's 100% renewable. In the state of Florida, there's a monopoly system, so since I reside in Pinellas County, I have to get my power from Duke, and so those are the way the laws are constructed.
And if somebody has any questions for you, how will they get in touch with you? If they have any questions for the Ready for Sierra Club or the Ready for 100 campaign, if they are a local government listening and wants a meeting with Brian?
Yeah, so we have a website. So Suncoast Sierra and Pinellas 100 is our website. And you can go out there and get all kinds of contact information. And if I could make one more plug for our Safety Harbor meeting tonight.
Please do.
So tonight at 7 o'clock. There at Safety Harbor City Hall, there will be a resolution considered for being the fourth city to be a 100% renewable goal city. Hopefully that'll make it 127, I think, in the United States. So please join us there. And if you're able to join us, wear green.
Well, that's perfect. Well, thank you so much, Brian, for coming in and taking the time out. It's been great to have you. And I just want to mention that coming up next is Radioactivity, and then at noon, this midpoint with Sean Cunnan, and he's going to be also talking about the Safe Harbor vote for tonight and whether or not to set a goal of the 100% renewable energy. And then he's also going to be discussing what is democratic socialism, and he's going to be playing a part of a recent speech by Bernie Sanders. And thank you again to all the listeners who tune in every other Monday to the Sustainable Living Show.
All right. Well, Brian, thanks a lot for coming by. Tanya, we'll see you next week as we fundraise. It'll be our fundraising drive.
All right. I will be joining you. Perfect. Okay.
And you're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. Stay tuned. Coming up in just a moment, the news from NPR and bringing you out with some music from Oliver Mitsukutsi. This is WMNF Tampa.
Lucky number, I'm a